ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Solaria Report. This is Money and Markets with John Titus and Catherine Austin Fitz. We're recording May 11th to publish on May 12th. And our theme today is a happy one.
Yes, it is. And it's the first time we're ever going to introduce a theme with video. So what I want to do is, I'll play the videos. There's two clips we want to see, and then You can introduce the theme.
Okay.
It's the story of the Derby told through Eric Reed. He is the trainer of Rich Strike. So let's cut over to Eric Reed. He's just been notified. This interview takes place the morning of the Derby before the race. He's just been notified that his horse, Rich Strike, has made the race. The original 20-horse field was altered somewhat. One of the horses dropped out, and he's just learned that his horse is now in the race, and he gives us a little interview where he's got an interesting backstory. So let's cut to that and hear what he has to say.
Now, you told me on the phone when we were talking that a barn fire in 2016 set you back, really emotional for you. So as you're kind of reflecting and processing over the next 24 hours, what are your thoughts just having a Kentucky Derby starter here?
After all the years I trained horses, when that barn fire happened and we lost 23 of our children, I didn't think I'd be able to keep going. And the friendship and love I got from my fellow trainers and the community, it got me through it. And I don't even know what to say.
Okay, so he points back to his horse, Rich Strike. He lost 23 horses in a barn fire. I mean, what a tragedy. I watched that.
That is a horrible, horrible thing to happen, because there's, with a good trainer like Eric Reed, there's such an emotional connection between you and your horses.
Yeah.
It's just horrible. Yeah.
And the camera and the audio get that in that clip. I've watched that clip a half dozen times. I can't watch it without choking up.
I know.
So anyway, let's cut to the race now and see. He says, well, here I am. Well, here he is. So the race opens up. One tool here real quick and just mark a couple things. This is a post. It's a 16th of Le Mans post. The race opens up and they think the race is really on this guy. This is the favorite in the race. And this guy, Eric Reed's horse, is way back here. So you can see that horse is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it's 8 lengths back.
Yeah. And I just have to say, for those who don't know anything about horse racing, this is Churchill Downs. This is the Kentucky Derby. It's the first of the Triple Crown. It is for 3-year-olds. It is the race of the year.
Yes, right. It's a Triple Crown, right. The other thing to notice here, this is shot from a drone. There's actually another drone in the view. But anyway, it's a little bit over halfway through when this picks up. But let's watch this. Watch this finish. This is unbelievable.
Zozos is next after 3/4 in 1:10.45, and now Epicenter comes splitting horses and is moving up quickly as Crown Pride takes the lead around the far turn. It is Crown Pride battling with Messier. They're stride for stride. Epicenter and Zozos in behind them. Cyberknife swings up on the outside. Sandon gets the rail run, and they're into the stretch. And it's Messier, Crown Pride, and Epicenter is coming up on the outside. Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandon is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandon, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter, Sandon, Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh my goodness, the longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby.
Wow.
Wow.
The longest shot. That horse was 82, 84 to 1.
Right.
And won the Kentucky
He was
Derby.
As high as 90 at one point.
It was over 90. It was 99. The tote board in horse racing is an horse historical artifact. Only goes up to 99.
Right.
In the old days, they didn't have 3 digits. So 99 means north of 99.
Right. Right.
But so, by post time, he drifted down to 82.
But that was an incredible ride. So the trainer did a great job. The jockey did a great job. The owner, Rich Dawson, oil and gas guy, did a great job. And, that was quite a scene in the winner's circle.
Yeah, it was. So right. Now, by way of that background with Eric Reed's story, the theme this week is?
Is do not put a period where God puts a comma.
Boy, yeah. So
so the, it could have been period so.
Yeah. Right. The period would have been when the his horses died.
Right.
And he thought about quitting and he didn't.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And now he's on the top, of, you know, he's at the top. That's an incredible, you know, many, many great trainers train their whole life and never get a horse in the Derby, let alone win. So this is big. Right.
Right. Yeah. There's trainers who get in the Derby many, many, many times and they never win. Right.
So all my life, I've loved horse racing, and I've followed horse racing. But one of the reasons I love horse racing is you still have the possibility of meritocracy. Anything can happen. And this is a beautiful example of why meritocracy works. Let the best horse win.
And, right.
And somebody, the Ridge Strike was purchased by Rich Dawson and Eric Reed in a claiming race for $30,000 not that long ago.
Yeah, so, the claiming race for people who don't, I've spent a shameful amount of time at racetracks. A claiming race is sort of the cheap way to get a horse.
Right.
I mean, the real way, you know, the rich people, they do it through, you know, inheritance and they transfer a horse. It's all done privately. The claiming race, you have a race and it's an open field and whoever puts up the money can get the horses in that race at the price.
Right. Right.
You know, so it's like,
I don't know
auction.
Who lost Rich Strike in the claiming race, but I suspect he's sorry he put him in a claiming race.
Yes, I imagine he is probably upset.
Anyway, so a real push, a real inspiration for meritocracy and never quitting. You know, there's an old expression in the investment markets, you got to be in it to win it. And
yeah,
Eric Reed stayed in and he winned it. So that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. That was a fantastic finish. And it was great. The drone footage from the top really captures like how far back that horse is.
Yeah.
If you watch.
So
from
I watched
the telescope
like,
view, you can't see it.
I watched 10 different videos of that. And then you sent me that one and you said, watch this. And I thought, you know, why am I not surprised that Titus found the best video?
No, because I was, like I said, I spent a shameful amount of time at the track. So,
I
still know people anyway.
Okay. Let's dive in.
Back to business, back to earth.
Right.
War in the Ukraine. Let's hit it. This is from LouRockwell.com and a little background on the war here, which you don't see in mainstream media. A scheme to send U.S. weapons to Ukraine using the Lend-Lease formula pioneered during World War II to skirt neutrality laws was officially approved by Congress this week. However, and this, you know, this is, you know, May 2nd he's talking about. However, it was put together all the way back in January, more than a month before Moscow recognized the Donbass Republics as independent and sent troops into Ukraine. Senators Blumenthal and Graham endorsed it the very next day, January 20th. Other endorsements trickled in over the following week with a total of 14 senators on board by February 9th. And then here you see Russia did not recognize the independence of the regions until February 21st. And that was where, by the way, there was a ceasefire going on. And right. I want to cut over to a note here from Moon of Alabama real quick, because this sort of captures what's going on. The February 15th report of a monitor in Ukraine records, you know, basically 41 explosions in the ceasefire area on February 15th, 76 on February 16th, 316, and it escalates up until 1,484 explosions on February 22nd. And then, of course, Russia goes in on the 24th. So query who is really whipping up the war in Ukraine,
right.
Given that.
Right. Right. Well, John, war takes planning, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It does.
If you look at the amount of money that seems to be pouring through Ukraine, you wonder what's really going on there.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's been some speculation among people who sort of track, you know, there's a lot of people who read Jane's and all sorts of sort of war publications, defense publications, who are speculating like, this does seem to be a way for the U.S. to offload and defense contractors to offload old equipment at premium prices.
Right. Right. That is absolutely going on. But I suspect there's a, you know, I think there's a little bit of money laundering going on there, too.
There's a lot going on. It's a lot. Right. It's very suspect. I mean, the Stinger missiles, for example, haven't been. I think the last time they were manufactured, rolled off a manufacturing line was 2002. It's 20 years.
Really?
It's been a long time. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Holy a lot cow. Of old machinery is getting finding its way over there.
Yep.
Anyway. Okay. Let's keep it going on war in Ukraine. Next story from the Journal. This is pretty easy one. EU proposes ban on Russian oil imports. Let's just get into it. The European Union proposed a ban on imports of Russian crude oil within 6 months and on refined oil products from the country by year end. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said Wednesday. Okay. What happens? Oil prices jumped on the announcement that they're going to cut back on oil. Now, what do you make of that?
So I have no idea how Europe could survive without Russian oil and gas. There's one rumor, just speculation, that the Russians are going to cut it off. But whether the Europeans are going to ban it or the Russians cut it off, I don't see how that works. So you're talking about phenomenally dramatic changes in the economy. And, you know, you can to me, you can say goodbye to German industry if that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, that gets into our next story.
Right.
This war has been quite disruptive, and I'm not sure why. I'm not sure if it's because things aren't going as planned. But the next story, very interesting from Bloomberg: German regulator shelves ESG rules after Russian energy fears. Interesting. Germany's financial regulator has shelved planned rules for classifying investment funds as sustainable after Russia's invasion of Ukraine sent shockwaves to global energy markets. This is a quote from the regulator, BaFin President Mark Branson. "We have decided to put our planned directive for sustainable investment funds on hold." BaFin's announcement indicates just how much Russia's war and the associated energy crunch has unsettled the investment industry shift toward green energy. The best laid plans of mice and men. How about it?
Well, we've been watching both the ESG, sustainable development, and climate change rules roll out. A lot of times they're packaged together. And you're talking about a series of efforts which are not economically logical, but they're also unbelievably expensive. So you're going from efficient energy to inefficient energy. And promoting all of this is something that should be integrated into the investment. The whole thing is not logical, makes no sense. And I've always assumed it's because they wanted to dramatically reduce the energy footprint of the average citizen. You know, but they can get the Russians to engineer that. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Just cut through all the red tape. Don't bother with all that. Just get the Russians to cut. Right?
I guess.
That'll do it. Right.
That'll do it. Yeah. Okay, more weirdness from the Ukraine. It's, more of the same. Biden sends First Lady Jill to war-torn Ukraine after Zelensky urged him to come. It's not going to work. Okay, it appears the White House PR team has been quite busy trying to get creative in terms of ways it could display support for Ukraine, short of the president actually going there himself, as he has been requested and urged by Zelensky. They come up with a Mother's Day surprise, the White House did, in the form of First Lady Jill Biden traveling to a war zone to meet the First Lady of Ukraine for a photo op. And there you have it. It's all about the photo op.
So if you look, we wanted this in here because there have been story after story of people going to Kiev, which is impossible. If you have a real war,
yeah,
you can't go. If you look at the maps, the Russians have a semicircle around, part of Kiev. You're not going to send, and supposedly they control the airspace, you're not going to send the First Lady to Kiev. You know, the absurd one was Bono, doing a concert in the subway.
Oh, that was ludicrous.
And the subway is lighted so that it looks purple. It's like, okay, what's the message here?
Yeah. Right. You got a lighting crew down there in the subway.
So there was one video. I have no idea if it's meritorious or not, but of a French journalist who in March went to Kiev. He's been traveling around Ukraine on the train, and he's just, you know, he's got his camera coming around with him, and he's describing the fact that he can't find a war. And the only signs of a war are the media setups at the train station to do filmings on the war. But he can't find a war.
Yeah, well, is Russia really concentrating its efforts there?
Well, Russia's clearly over in the Donbass, but, you know, they've come down through Belarus around Kiev. I don't, you know, whatever is going on in the Ukraine, you know, there's definitely something happening in the Ukraine, and it's now the driver of the going direct reset, you know, because you can get control of the food supply. You can shut everybody's energy footprint. So, you know, COVID-19.
And you have a massive cover story.
Right. You have a massive cover story. I don't know if you saw, was it you who sent it to me, of Senator McConnell standing up and saying, we all know that Ukraine's the most important thing happening in the world, because the latest subsidy appropriation has gone through the House, but it's, you know, they're still trying to work it through the Senate. Anyway, but the whole thing is, you know, I told you, it brings new words, it brings new meaning to the word war theater, because the whole thing is just a theater. So the question is, what is really going on?
Right. Well, you saw that in the Biden, you know, Joe Biden story. It's expressly about a photo op on Mother's Day.
Right.
Right. That was the whole point of that. The entire thing. It was like, well, what did we do?
Ladies and gentlemen, if there's a real war, the first lady's not going to fly into the, you know, the first lady, Eleanor Roosevelt, did not go to Paris when the Nazis marched in. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Right. Right.
So, but why, you know, why try to market something as clearly patently absurd? Is it a way of just saying, it's like the, you know, what we were talking earlier about trying to get people to seriously propose, speak, act like it's perfectly normal that men can have periods. You know, it's like, if we can require you to pretend that non-reality is reality, we've got you.
Yeah, I don't think it's conscious. I think that Washington has gotten so detached from what they call a flyover America that they're just in their own world now. And this is just spun out of control. And you get stuff like this, and you start to see glimpses of the insane, deranged, diseased mindset in D.C. with stories like that.
So, if you come where I live in Hickory Valley, we're one of the states that you know, send a lot of people into the Army, and you've got a lot of vets with combat experience.
Right.
You know, and they're going to look at this headline while they see their neighbors having, adverse vaccine events. And I can't tell you what people, you know, anybody with real combat experience, you know, is grounded in a way, in a very special way. And they're going to look at this, and I don't know what the results of this are going to be, but there's going to be a reverberation that's very, very powerful.
So, I think of my dad, who was a Marine Corps artillery captain in Vietnam.
Right.
Died quite some time ago. I can only imagine his response to this.
Yeah, he's a guy he lived with real trouble.
He hated Robert McNamara like I've never seen hatred before.
Yep.
Anyway. Okay. All right, keep it going on the war front. Here you go, visual capitalist arms transfers, U.S. and Russia's biggest trading partners. And this is just a graphic. So you have the U.S. here on the left and Russia on the right, and who they are transferring to. So the people on the margin of this graph are the recipients of the arms. So you see Saudi Arabia is the U.S.'s main, you know, benefactor or recipient of weapons. India, China, and Algeria for Russia. It's a very interesting graphic, but it takes time to kind of parse through.
There's a great scene in the movie The International where an Italian arms manufacturer is explaining to two people from Interpol how this game works and why, you know, you send in the arms, you finance somebody sending in the arms, but then you get them entrapped on debt. What's interesting is the U.S. is playing the debt game. The Russians, much less so. But Russia's our number one, is the U.S. number one competitor in arms sales, and it's gotten very, very competitive. And that's part of the tension part of this is a market share war.
You see that the competition and the thickness of the bars, you know.
Right.
It's not, the U.S. is bigger, but you have to pause a minute to see that.
Right.
Right.
Anyway. Well, the other thing, this is why MBS not returning Biden or taking Biden's phone call is such a big thing, because Saudis have been the number one purchaser of U.S. arms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That's big. Yeah. Okay. The next story, this is from India. You got to love India, right? This is space military and global turf wars now.
Uh-huh.
But you got to love India because they just keep it real. India asked coal plants to run flat out to ease power crisis. This is from Bloomberg, and it takes a little bit to parse through the story.
Uh-huh.
But so what's the story here? India's government ordered, and that's the key, ordered coal-fired power plants to run on imported fuel. Let me try this again. India's government ordered coal-fired power plants that run on imported fuel to operate at full capacity to address an energy crisis. Okay, so they're not operating at full capacity right now. Of the 17.6 gigawatts of India's power generation capacity that's designed to use imported coal, just 10 out of that 17.6 is currently operating. Most of the plants have contracts with buyers that do not allow them to pass along rising fuel costs. So they interview an energy company here, JSW Energy, which runs two such plants, said producing electricity with imported coal has become expensive. So they don't want to do it. That's right. The resistance. But under India law, powers under Section 11 of the country's electricity laws allow the government to force any power station to operate as directed in extraordinary circumstances. And the power ministry says, you know, we'll take steps to ease the burden of high imported coal prices on the plants sometime in the future, basically. In the meantime, get up to 100%.
Right.
Because we're not having a crisis, okay?
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So, again, out the window goes all the ESG, the green stuff.
Right. Well, if you look at thermodynamics, coal is more efficient than some of this crazy wind farm stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think there's going to be some remorse in America about destroying our coal companies.
There's also, right. There's also a lot more capacity
right.
with coal. You only have so much capacity with green energy.
Right.
Right. You could put solar panels over the whole, you know, North America, and you're not going to get our power requirement anywhere close.
Right.
Anyway, okay, let's keep it going on space military. This next story is interesting. From Latin America, Lula's advisors insist on unified currency for Latin America. Not sure what to make of this story. Former Brazilian president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva and his economic team would push for a unified regional currency like the euro to end South America's inclination to rely on the U.S. dollar if he should win the October 2nd elections over the incumbent Bolsonaro. Okay? The proposed name for the new South American digital currency would be SIR, and it would be issued by a South American central bank with an initial capitalization made by member countries proportional to their respective shares in global trade. This does not sound like a good idea to copy the euro, but let's keep it going. The proposal does not seem to displease Bolsonaro, the incumbent, either. So in August of 2021, Brazil's current economy minister, Guedes, said that a single currency for Mercosur would allow for greater integration of a free trade zone. It would create a currency that would be one of the five or six relevant currencies in the world. And I suspect that's really what's going on there. But they're both candidates are saying, yeah, we want to go the way of the euro.
Right. So, well, part of it is I think they want an alternative to the dollar. And it's true that if the Latin American countries did a combined currency, there's no doubt they could move into the reserve currency baskets with some kind of market share percentage. The other thing is, if you look at what the BRICS are doing to prepare one, you know, in many respects, it makes more sense for the Eurasian group to do something and Latin America to do something separate on its own. So,
yeah. But think about this story, though. I mean, You know what the problem with the ECB is? One of the many problems with the ECB is that it's a central bank and there's no control over it. It's run by technocrats and the individual companies, Germany, France, you know, everybody, Belgium, they don't have control over this political body. It's doing whatever it wants with the money. And South America is saying, you know what? We'd like to go that way because that's an improvement over relying on the dollar.
Yeah.
Like, how bad is relying on the dollar?
Pretty bad.
Wow. Must be pretty bad if both of your candidates are like, yeah, that's the way to go.
Right.
The euro.
Right. Like, well, remember, Brazil will be an 800-pound gorilla in the group. So they'll be Germany.
It'll be Germany. Right. They're going to be Germany.
Right.
Yeah. So that's sort of like the Latin American version of Germany over there. That story.
Right. Although, but I would remind everyone, if you travel around Europe and you go to Sweden, and you go to Poland, you go to the UK, the countries that stayed out of the euro, it was to their advantage.
Right.
Right.
Right. Euro's not looking so good now.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Okay. Diluting the brand. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
We had a story last week about Nina Jankowicz. Right. The disinformation czar or minister or whatever.
And you would have thought it couldn't get worse.
She's back in the news again. OK, this is from Breitbart, I think. Anyway, I'm not going to play this because I'm just not going to play it. But Biden truth minister sings in a YouTube video back in, you know, this is December of 2015. Who do I screw to be rich and famous and powerful? And so that's, you know, this is what she finds funny. I'll tell you, I'm going to show you something real quick here on YouTube. I'm going to cut to the YouTube video. I'm not going to play it. I'm just going to show you real quick. This is the video from 2015. That's what they're talking about. Check out the likes. YouTube got rid of the likes and dislikes button, but there's an extension you can use. It shows you the likes and dislikes. Look at that. Wow. 101 likes, 3,100 dislikes. Not popular. Not funny, Nina. You're not funny. You're a menace to society.
Well, the examples I've seen, I haven't gone in and researched her independently, but the examples I've seen are all her promoting disinformation.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that's her job.
Right. That's her job.
Right.
I mean, this is, you know, this is just, again, the last week we saw her, remember the Mary Poppins routine? Singing? Yeah. She looks like, this is a clown. This is probably the best diluting the brand story ever, just promoting clowns into roles of huge responsibility.
Right.
That are probably constitutionally, you know, very dubious to begin with.
The guy who interviewed her and appointed her from DHS in testimony last week, I will give him credit. He took full responsibility. He said he interviewed her and hired her and promoted her.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, next story. Last story in diluting the brand. This story could have been slotted really anywhere. So let's just cut to it. This is the annual conference of Berkshire Hathaway, Buffett and Charlie Munger. And again, I'm not completing the video. The video is 6-7 minutes long. And if you offered me all the Bitcoin in the world for $25, I wouldn't take it, says Warren Buffett. You want to explain what this is, or you want me to summarize it?
Yeah, so I thought, you know, it's funny because Buffett and I are clearly on opposite, you know, sides of the universe. But when it comes to investment, I agree with him a lot. And it was one of the best descriptions of what, you know, why to me Bitcoin is a speculation and not an investment. So Buffett says, if you offered me 1% of all the farmland in America, you know, I'd write you a check right away for $25 billion, no problem. And he said, if you offered me 1% of all the apartment buildings in the country, I'd write you the check, you know, whatever that amount, no problem. He said, if you offered me all the Bitcoin for $25, I wouldn't do it because the only way I make money on Bitcoin is if somebody else comes in. So there's no fundamental activity, economic activity that can create a dividend or throw off a dividend or, you know, and what he's talking about is that Bitcoin depends on, you know, I mean, essentially it's a Ponzi scheme. In other words, it depends on other people saying, okay, I want to adapt this and use this, you know, but there's no fundamental economic value there. It's just a digital, it's just creating a digital thing. Now he pulls up the dollar, and what he says it, you know, more politely than I would. You know, behind this is a whole lot of real estate, farmland, and a nuclear arsenal.
Yeah, except there isn't. He's wrong about that. Everything he just criticized Bitcoins for is equally true of the dollar. And has been since 1971. You can't redeem it for anything.
I disagree.
It's a note. It's been since 71. It's a note. The dollars are just notes.
The dollar has a army and a financial bazooka behind it to force adaptation.
The bonds do, but the money doesn't. Well, the cash doesn't.
I can see why you would say that is a legal matter, but it's a practical matter for most people. It does. So if you look at what he's saying, he's drawing a distinction, which is very important. Now, I would also say, if you don't believe that real estate backs the dollar, just understand they have the right to seize all of our real estate if they need it to pay the debt.
Right. It's a sovereign power.
Right.
Okay. So the dollar is backed by sovereignty.
Right.
Okay.
Right. But, you know, Bitcoin doesn't have sovereignty behind it. It does have a limitation on how much it can issue. That's its advantage. Anyway, yeah,
but if you've got other dollars and nobody else has dollars, it's not worth that much. People are just going to go to another currency.
Right. Well, no, here's the problem. It's got such a dominant market share. Where are you going to go? In other words, there's no other currency yet that can take that market share. So you literally are a trap of, you know, you've bought into a scheme and everybody's got to keep the scheme going because there's no other way there's no other place. I mean, if you look at why everybody for years has been trying to buy land and real assets, it's because, you know, you've got $123 trillion in the bond market. That's a lot of money to get into real assets.
Yeah, I find that clip more valuable as where Uncle Warren is headed.
Right.
You know, apartments and farmland.
Right.
Than I do as a critique of Bitcoin for 6 minutes and 43 seconds. I could do a better job in 20 seconds.
So, but here's the thing. What he's saying is he's doing farmland. He's doing food. He's doing housing. He's doing energy. And what he's saying is,
right,
when you all get wiped out of everything else, you know, you're going to have to rent from me. You're going to have to eat my food and et cetera. So basically he's, you know, it's a more subtle version of it's 2030. You have no assets. And while you're buying Bitcoin, I'm buying up all the real assets that you need to eat and live.
Yeah.
What it sounds like to me. Right.
That's what it sounded like to me too.
Right.
Right.
And they always tell you what they're doing.
Now, I mean, I'm with you. I happen to agree with his critique of Bitcoin,
mm-hmm.
but not for the reasons he's saying.
Right, right,
right. Okay. Right. All right. let's turn to FedWatch. This is a really interesting one, and it's going to come as a surprise to you, Catherine. And I apologize; I didn't see this yesterday. But last week we had a story about the disinformation agency and the $8 billion to Ukraine out of the 33, which is really going to set up a new agency. Uh-huh. And we said there's a great article by a guy, I think it's Sundance, at Conservative Treehouse. And we're going to get into this article next week because it's really important. Okay. So last night I'm putting together the show, the links. And this is what I find. I go to the thing and I'm like, what are you talking about?
Holy cow.
Yeah. It's the gone? Article is totally gone. So I go to the Wayback Machine. I can't find it there. Okay. So let me show you what happens. I'm going to paste it into the bar. Can you see the bar on my screen?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you can. Okay. So let me get rid of that. Yep. And hit return there. And it's up. Oh, there it is. But it's not there. Page not found in the upper left. I don't know if you... I'm going to
They got Conservative Treehouse to take that down?
Yep. Not only that. Okay. Not only that, I'm going to go to the thing I normally use, which is this is archive. Give it a second here, and I'm going to drop it in this bar just so everybody can see that it's not there. It's not anywhere.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, an article about disinformation agency saying, you know, this is really dangerous. It gets wiped from the internet.
Well,
is
I will tell you that the attorneys who write Conservative Treehouse really know what they're doing. And they know a lot about the inside baseball of legislation and sort of judicial decisions on big policy issues. They're smart. They're really, really good. And they've never published their names. Yeah. So I have no idea. Well, you know, I'm concerned that they're building a seizure infrastructure that can go global, using this, using the sanctions, using disinformation as an excuse. And it will give them the ability to seize huge amount of assets. And they're building that infrastructure through state, treasury, DOJ. Now, I can't prove that. I'm just smelling and, you know, I'm seeing all these dots that look like they're separate, but I don't, I have this really bad feeling.
That I do too. I see stuff like that. I'm like, you know, that sends a chill up my spine. Tells you can't me, find that.
That tells me there is a duck in this bush. I'm right. There's a duck in this bush. We just have to figure it out. So keep looking. We're going to keep looking. That is amazing. Yeah. I've never seen a story taken down from Conservative Treehouse.
I've never seen one you can't back into through one of the time machines. It's gone. It's as if it never existed.
DARPA created the internet. What am I, you know, what can I say?
Right. You got it. Okay, let's keep it going with FedWatch from LouRockwell.com. This is an article by David Stockman. I'm not going to punch through the article. I'm going to punch through the graphs. He basically says, hey, look at the balance sheet of all these. Here's the balance sheets of everybody. And you can see here, this is, you know, the pandemic and the balance sheets explode up across the board. Okay. Right. So you scroll down. This is just inflation. Whenever you see the bars up and down and up and down, it's inflation. That's inflation in the Netherlands. This is balance sheet, central bank assets for the euro area.
That's amazing.
Yeah, just exploding upward. Stockman is all over the board in terms of graphs. This one starts in 2006. It's just inconsistent, you know. I mean, anyway, but his point is basically, look, your balance sheets are way faster outrunning your gross domestic product.
Money is expanding far faster than your GDP, you're going to get really bad inflation. That's how it works.
Yep. And so this is probably his best graph. Japan. Here's the balance sheet in purple. Here's your GDP growth. I mean, right. You know. Okay. So that's let's see if there's any more. No, that was it. So anyway, that's a good collection of graphs to see. All of these central bank balance sheet expansions, it's very, very highly coordinated.
Right.
They're not independent of each other. They're lockstep.
Right.
That was my takeaway from that article.
Right. They know what they're doing and they know it's going to bring on serious inflation.
Yeah. So like the clip we saw last week with the head of the IMF, Georgieva, like, oh, I think we might have been like soccer match with too many.
We made a mistake.
So, are you kidding me, lady? Come on. Anyway.
Well, between, you know, it's all these different things that keep insulting our intelligence. So.
Yeah, the gaslighting is just off the charts.
Yeah, it is.
Right? Like, oh, it's a big mistake. We printed $6 trillion and the value of the money went down.
And gave it to our friends and we didn't know that was a problem.
Yeah, it inflated the stock market? What?
Really?
Shocked there's gambling in this casino. Okay. The next article in FedWatch is Wall Street Journal. This is just the Fed raising interest rates. Federal Reserve approved a rare half percentage point interest rate increase and announced plans to shrink its $9 trillion asset portfolio starting next month in a double-barreled effort to reduce inflation that is running at a four-decade high. The double barrels meaning we're going to cut the interest rates, we're going to raise the interest rates,
right,
and we're going to sell off assets from the balance sheet to get rid of them.
So I, you know, this happened the day after we recorded the last Money in Markets. Powell popped at 50 basis points. And I assume he's under severe global pressure to raise interest rates. So everybody who's sitting on huge dollar reserves, you know, is tired of watching their dollars debase. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's responding to global pressure.
Could be. I'll show you a graph in a minute because we touched. We'll come back to this sort of general theme of interest rates and money supply later. But yeah, it's having an effect right away. I can tell you that.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's going to clear inflation, but I think you're going to see a major crimp in the economy.
It's right.
That much is going to happen. Okay, this next story is very interesting. A third of small retailers can't pay rent.
This is scary.
Is financial struggles spike again. Whoa. The share of small retail businesses that couldn't make rent rose to 34% in April, up 6 percentage points from February, according to a survey. The survey cited inflation and gas price spikes, supply chain issues, labor shortages, reduced revenue, and increased rent. Of those small businesses surveyed, 46% said their rent was higher than 6 months ago.
Right.
And they go on down, and it can kind of the takeaway. Large retailers, quite simply, had more cash on hand from their businesses, as well as easy access to cheap capital from financial markets. This is explaining why you see big companies surviving during the lockdowns and everything else, and small retailers getting crushed. Here's why. The big ones had more cash. Well, no kidding, they had more cash since the Fed's quantitative easing purchased assets from those said same large entities.
Right.
Right.
Well, the other thing is, if you have to borrow at 17% and your competitor borrows at 0%, I mean, this is an insider-outsider game. And the reason, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about that story is, so this is just the United States, but it wouldn't surprise me if the numbers were comparable in Europe from what I'm watching, just driving around. So we know over a million small businesses last year went out.
Right.
If this is the case, how many more small businesses are going to go down this year?
Right. How many more are going to go down? And I'll come back to this graph during quantitative tightening.
Right. Exactly.
If it's 34% now and you're constricting the money supply,
right,
basically creating depression on purpose.
Right.
How many more are dead in the water? It's going to be a big number.
It's going to be a big number. It's true.
Yeah. It's starting to look like the QE was the first half of a two-stroke cycle.
Right.
You know, kill them on the way up with QE, right?
Yeah.
Because we inflate.
And kill them on the way down. Right.
Yeah. All right. Next story in FedWatch. This is great. This is Carl Denninger.
This is the most important story of the week.
Yep. Now, Carl's formatting on his website, I'm just never been happy, so bear with me. Okay, so here's the real story. He's quoting a story, a report from the government. Non-farm business sector labor productivity decreased 7.5% in the first quarter of 2022. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the BLS, reported today, as output decreased 2.4% and hours worked increased 5.5%. That adds up to 7.9%. I'm not sure how that math works, but okay, I'll take it at face value. His point, though, he blames it, on all this shenanigans with companies, forcing workers to do this and that and dedicating themselves to various causes. Dedicating your company ethos to various social constructs, no matter what they are, also destroys morale and ultimately output. The simple fact is that anyone who is cranked off about such a thing, it wants to do the re-demonstration. Again, no matter what the cause, will be outperformed by any person who says meh to such causes and simply does their job. It is simply the fact that every person has a limited amount of resource, and that which you expend on other things, like your causes, on company time, is destructive of the productivity of the firm. And he's pointing to this number saying, you want to know why that number is so bad? It's right here. It's in your cause of the week club.
So, again, this is the United States, but it wouldn't surprise me if the numbers translated to Europe. Our entire economic model depends on regular increases in productivity. And if it goes the other way, it is simply a matter of time until the society fails. So, if this continues, that's it. It's over.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, they're picking winners and losers, right?
Well, but the other thing is a 7.5% drop in productivity.
Wow.
Is enormous. It's enormous. Think of the stock market dropping by 80%. It's that kind of number.
Right.
It's so huge in the scheme of things.
But it's a quarterly figure, but it's year over year. I mean, how many yearly drops of 7.5% could you have? Not many.
Well, here's the thing. If you look at all the things that have been happening over the last 10 years, you know, I've been expecting to see big productivity drops. And one of the questions I think you asked it is, why didn't this come up earlier? You know, why is it now coming out?
But, right.
So much of the behavior in healthcare, in health, in environment is all designed to destroy productivity. So it was really a matter of time. But this number is very frightening.
It is, because it may be a delayed reaction. It may be the first of many, and that's the problem. Why now? It's like, well, it just took that long for the effect to show up. People are sick of it. They can't take it anymore.
Well, if you look at all the things
we shall see in future quarters.
Right. If you look at all the things that caused this, they haven't gone away. It's going to get worse.
Right. They haven't gone away.
Right.
We might be, like we just were saying, we might be in a cycle, a two-stroke cycle of, you know, we have the inflationary part due to a crisis and the contraction, that, you know, that's kind of what I'm thinking this is headed.
Right. And that's why it's funny, because I talked to one person on our team, and we have a series of expenditures that need to be made on equipment, or, you know, basically different things that need to get switched out and switched in equipment. And I just said, do it all now. Get it done as fast as possible. And they said, well, there's a problem, because it's people have supply shortages. And, you know, for every project we're trying to do, there's a problem with supply, or there's a problem with getting the people out who need to install it, or, you know, it's just constant friction. The friction is just skyrocketing for many different reasons. It's not one thing. And I said to them, that's exactly why we have to get all of these done as fast as possible, because if you think it's bad now, I mean, the friction could hit a level in the fall and winter where it's impossible to get anything done. So just press and push hard, because, you know,
we make hay while the sun shines.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Let's keep it going. Next story about Dracula. Anyway, Goldman Sachs backed rental fund buys entire community of 87 single family homes in Central Florida. A joint venture between two Fundrise sponsored funds has acquired a community of 87 detached single family rental homes in Palm Bay, Florida. Fundrise launched its flagship interval fund in January 2021. Interesting timing there, and received financial backing from Goldman Sachs Group in June 2021 with a $300 million credit facility to scale the fund's investment in single-family homes. So you might ask yourself, where is all this money coming from? And that is what I want to go to. So where is the $300 million coming from?
Uh-huh.
I want to show you a graph here of the Fed balance sheet. And, all right, you could see that, and that's enough. It's not quite like I want it, but the yellow down here, the gold, that's the Fed's balance sheet, total assets. You can see it spiking up here. This line here is the pandemic. Okay. Mm-hmm. The blue is retail bank accounts. Okay. That's deposits at commercial banks. You can see them spiking up in tandem. That's where that money is coming from. So when the Fed gins up these reserves and buys assets from people like Goldman, it ends up getting into their bank account. And you can see that those two things in sympathy, that's where that money is coming from. And companies like Goldman are using that money to buy up houses in your neighborhood.
I have to tell you, if you look at what happened with FASB 56 and some of the other things, I think there's another line of money piled on top of that.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
So while 37 businesses, 37% of the businesses don't have money to pay their rent, the insiders are flush, are rolling in dough.
Because the balance sheet increases are going into their pockets.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Again, it's insider,
but
outsider.
We didn't know. It was all unintended consequences.
Oh, yes. Yes, we didn't. You printed $6 trillion and it ended up in your neighborhood. It's taking your homes from you.
Yes.
Okay, the next story. It's not really a story. It's just that you sent it to me. I'm like, what is this? Okay, savings bond. Okay, this is the Treasury's website, Treasury Direct.
Right.
Okay, treasurydirect.gov. This is their website, Series 1 Savings Bond. Let's just zoom into the deal. What is an I-bond? Okay, Series I Savings Bond. What is an I-bond? A savings bond that earns interest based on combining a fixed rate and an inflation rate. What interest does an I-bond earn? A combination of a fixed rate that stays the same for the life of the bond and an inflation rate that is set twice a year. For bonds issued from May 2022 through October 22, the combined rate is 9.62%.
So when a subscriber and Ask Catherine told me this, I didn't believe it. Because, you know, I stopped doing individual investment advisory in 2018. I'm not current on what an I-bond or the tips are paying, and I didn't know. And when they told me, I was like, what? No, now, here's what's interesting. So Tim Caban, I asked him, and I posted both in Ask Catherine and at Subscriber Input, his lengthy response on sort of what's going on. But here's the deal. What's been shocking to me is people saying, oh, what a great rate. Well, why don't I take advantage of that? And my attitude is, wait a minute. These are the same people who have, they're not agreement capable. They've broken the law in many different respects. They, you know, we've proven, I mean, your article on sovereignty is the, you know, we've proven that they don't obey the law.
Right.
And the head of the Treasury is over sucking up to Klaus Schwab and you know, who's saying it's 2030, you have no, I mean, and they're putting into place a global infrastructure to seize assets, I believe, from everybody. Why would you want to deposit your money with them? I mean, if they offered me 25%, I used to have a wonderful partner, ran the trading floor, Dylan Reed. And when somebody made a profit, he'd come screaming out. He had the accountant sitting next to him because he watched every penny. He'd come screaming out and he'd say, he used to be a pizza chef. He said, tell me why I'm so lucky. He's Italian. He's screaming out, tell me why I'm so lucky. And, you know, so that's my question here. Tell me why I'm so lucky, because I don't trust these guys.
That sounds like a boss I used to work for. I worked in a pizza restaurant a long time.
Really? Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Speaking of ownership, it changing ownership. Next story. Let's look at this. Proportion of foreign-held agricultural land, all privately held agricultural land in the U.S. as of December 31, 2020. So foreign investment in U.S. cropland nearly triples in the past decade.
Yeah, it's not just Bill Gates and Buffett who are buying.
No, right. So let's zoom in here and highlight the key points. Foreign investment in cropland has nearly tripled in the past decade, according to the USDA. The increase has largely been driven by foreign-owned wind companies signing long-term leases on a large number of acres. Okay, this is key here. I never thought about this. The acres actually utilized by the wind farms is very small. The small footprint of wind towers erected on land. In other words, you're getting one little windmill is taking up a lot of farmland, guys.
Yep.
Foreign investors own more than just cropland. Overall, they own or lease nearly 37.6 million acres of agricultural land. That is an area slightly larger than the state of Illinois and makes up about 3% of all privately held agricultural land in the U.S. I think that's it in the way of, but that gives you a flavor for how much farmland we're talking about here.
Right.
Right. It's telling me there's four highlights, but I'm only seeing three. Anyway. What do you make of that?
For years now, 10 or more years, I keep arguing with people as they inherit the family farm. Don't sell the farmland. Don't sell the farmland. And now I think people are beginning to understand.
Yeah.
I think the land that grows the food that you eat, it's very important who owns that land. And if you look at who's buying it up, all I can tell you is if you have family farmland, don't sell it.
The other thing, I will never look at a windmill the same way. I will look at every windmill now as I drive across country. Like that's food. That's food that's not in the market because of that windmill.
Right. Well, you pass a lot of farms both in the United States and Europe, and you'll see a farm with a small number of windmills, and you realize that's how the farmers are making their nut. You know, they're leasing, you know, for windmills or tower. They continue to grow. So I just went out in the tulip fields and, you know, the tulips are in blossom and there's nothing more beautiful than driving through fields, you know, miles and miles of tulip fields. But, you know, the tulips are growing, and right next to them is the windmills. So the thing to see about the windmills, if you've ever seen a picture, because the windmills don't last for that long. And then essentially they are taken down and their parts are buried. So they open up the land and they bury them in underneath the soil and then put the soil back on them. If you've ever seen the pictures of that, what you realize is, you know, that can't be environmentally friendly.
No, right. It's like the masks, you know, like what happened, you know, you're telling me a trillion polypropylene masks floating around is good for the environment?
Right.
I don't hear anybody complaining about that.
Right. Oh, the Solari report, you hear a lot of people complaining about that.
Oh, good. All right. Next story. This is another interesting one. Last one in FedWatch. Computer malfunction caused death of 27,000 chickens. Okay. This is a weird story, though. Look at the dates on this. Something's way off here. On May 26, 2020, there are around 50,000 chickens lodged on the farm. What happens? The shed gets sealed off, causing the inside temperature to rise rapidly. The chickens were trapped inside and suffered heat stress. Leicestershire County Council launched an investigation to identify what caused the deaths of so many children. It's an interesting little typo there. Thought they were chickens. So I'm not really sure.
So we don't know what happened, but my question is, did they get hacked? You know, there's been lots of anecdotal evidence to suggest that one of the things starting fires in different places is the smart meters, that smart feeders can accidentally or purposely start fires. And you look at this and you wonder, did those guys get hacked?
The story is dated, you know, and it's in the links. It's dated April 29th, 2022.
Right. So if you go
that
to...
first date they give is May 26, 2020.
Right.
Like, well, what's wrong with this? So, yeah, this story is like this. I just like, okay, the date's way off and you now have children dying instead of chickens. I'm done.
So if you go to Solari, we have a commentary called War and Food. And it has a ton of links to, we have something called the Food Risk Tracker. We're tracking all the stories about what's happening in the food supply. One of the charts we have in the data section is of the growth in animal protein. And since 1960, essentially all the growth in animal protein available globally is from chickens. So you had the head of the CDC say the next pandemic's going to be avian flu. And that really has my hackles, you know, I'm suspicious. So we're tracking sort of anything that has to do with, you know, government slaughter or accidental slaughter of chicken livestock. We're tracking.
Yeah. The food processing plants burning, you know, birds getting slaughtered, you know, all these things are tending toward the same thing. It's like the farmland. There's less and less food is available.
Right.
Yeah, the red arrow couldn't be bigger.
Right. Well, check out the food risk tracker if you're interested.
I think we looked at that last week.
Yeah, we did. But it's up in the news trends and stories bar as well. You can find it through the commentary, the news trends and stories. And we're just going to keep doing it.
The thing that got me about it, Catherine, was just when we were looking at it last week, maybe in the pre-show, just scrolling through this thing, it's like how long that list is.
Right. Right.
It goes on for pages.
I'm a great believer in pattern recognition.
Yeah, you know, well, things always a big pattern there.
Right. Things always go wrong. You always have fires. You always have floods. But if you look at how many are happening and how many are strategically impacting the food supply, it makes me nervous. So.
Yes, it is. It is. Right. It's a little nerve wracking. I must agree.
Right.
Okay. Let's move on. Normally at this point, we would have a CBDC and crypto story, but we don't have any CBDC and crypto stories this week, curiously enough.
Kind of odd.
A little bit odd. It's, well, just that happens. Things go. Some weeks we have seven videos, and this week we had none in the bottom of the stories. We had two videos in theme. So it's you know.
Yeah, but the regulators are sneaking around and working hard on crypto. So
for sure they are. Yeah. But and the press is asleep. Anyway. So let's go on to Farmageddon. This next story wins the, are you kidding me, award of the week. like, okay, you're going to love this one. From the Telegraph in England. One bite from this tick can make you allergic to meat for life. Right? Here we go. A tick that makes people vomit when they eat red meat is spreading across the United States. Just one bite from the Lone Star tick, named for the white spot on its back, can trigger a lifelong allergy known as alpha-gal syndrome. Alpha-gal syndrome. I mean, are you... Okay, you're, I know you're
so
kidding me.
So I see Ellis Medavoy sitting in the room and saying, you know, the African green monkey was a great op, but wait till you see this. Because who knows what they're putting in the food to make us not like red meat or putting in the spray. But you need it. You need an excuse, right? You need a story. And I can just see... I can just see everybody in the room saying African green monkey was good. The Chinese Wuhan bat, that was good too. But let's do a tick this time. That'll really get them.
Yeah. Okay. How do I know? How do I know the story is total BS? I'm going to cut back to it. The story says here, known name for the white spot on its back. If I go to my digital color meter on Mac here and hover over the white spot, there's a lot of red and green. There's way more red and green. R252, G240, uh-huh. Blue 129. That's a yellow spot. That's not a white spot. Okay. So, you know, that story is just obvious nonsense. Right in your face. Like, that's a white spot. You see the white spot? It's like, no, that's a yellow spot.
You know? I don't know. I don't know.
The next story, another one. I believe what this guy's saying. The writer is very skeptical. In interview, Senator Johnson from Wisconsin says it may be true that COVID vaccines cause AIDS. In a video interview published on the right-wing social media platform Rumble, Senator Ron Johnson said it may be true that vaccines against COVID-19 cause AIDS. Johnson was being interviewed by the anti-vaccine lawyer Todd Callender, who alleged that the shots induce AIDS, and that the FDA knew so when the vaccines were approved for emergency use. Okay. The claim that the COVID-19 vaccine causes AIDS is false. And if you click on this link here, it goes to a fact check from Reuters, which is utterly, it's ridiculous. The fact check.
The Doctors for COVID Ethics group has been looking more and more into the history of HIV and AIDS. Because there is real indication that because the COVID-19 injections suppress your immune system, and some of the ingredients in it, we're concerned that it might cause you to be tested positive for AIDS. So there is a real concern here, and Johnson's very courageous for bringing it up.
He is. So,
yeah, he is. And part of this, I'm just about to interview at the end of the month Dave Resnick, who was Peter Duesberg's colleague, and knows a lot about what I would call the HIV/AIDS op. Because remember, this is what Fauci used to put out the most money, you know, and to build and control the kind of health control grid globally that he's built. So if they can get AIDS going again, Fauci and his crew can have a lot of fun. So this is a much more serious issue, and it's one of the top issues at the Doctors for COVID Ethics right now.
Yeah, good for them. I mean, it makes sense. You're compromising your immunity system. It doesn't surprise me at all about these vaccines.
Well, if they can come out and say we need mRNA vaccines for HIV/AIDS, we're off and running again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And Fauci, this guy goes back a long way, like you say. He's up and running again. He's making a lot of money. A lot of money.
Right.
You know, one story we didn't have this week was how many people are getting paid, and pharma just funneling money to these guys like Fauci through the NIH.
It's unbelievable. Well, you know, in Kennedy's book, he's put out $750 billion in his career. It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of scratch. Yep.
Right.
It's billions. The pharmaceutical dumping money into the NIH, it's in the multiple billions.
Right.
Right. Okay. Next story from the Wall Street Journal. This story gets the Bad Writing of the Week award for sure. FDA limits authorized use of J&J's COVID-19 vaccine. Agency makes change. Okay. So it's out. The COVID-19 vaccine's out. Then they're making a change. Makes the change after confirming 9 deaths tied to clotting condition among those who got the shot. The Food and Drug Administration limited the use of the COVID-19 vaccine from Johnson & Johnson after reviewing the risk of life-threatening blood clots. Okay, so they make a move here in response to thrombosis and thrombocytopenia. They're making a change. The CDC, okay, not the FDA, the CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention in December recommended the patients opt for one of the other vaccines over the Johnson & Johnson. It's like, well, okay, well, what's the change? I'm still waiting for the change. Our action limits the use of the vaccine to certain individuals. Okay, so there's the change. You're limiting the use of the vaccine to certain individuals. Which individuals are you talking about? We don't know. U.S. health authorities in April 2021 paused the use of J&J's vaccine to investigate. Like, what the hell? What are you talking about? What is the story? Something's going on with J&J's vaccine. So they're making a major change, and they're not telling you what it is.
So here's what's happening. We see all these moves to back off. You know, so Gates doing interviews where he said, well, we were wrong about the school shutdowns, and we're wrong about this, and we're wrong about that. So you have sort of Gates doing the mea culpa, and then you have the regulators backing off on certain things. At the same time, if you look behind the scenes, you've got a variety of different groups working to roll back out, you know, essentially a top-down mandate to force everybody to take these vaccines. So, yeah. You know, so this is all sort of window dressing while the next tsunami is being engineered. And the question is, why are they just trying to appease people before the elections? Remember, okay. The U.S. has got a huge election in November.
For sure.
Yeah. So it looks like they're just trying to appease. And then after the elections are over, the next tsunami comes pouring down and it's going to be much more powerful and dangerous.
But okay, hold that thought. In that last story about J&J's vaccine, the two takeaways are thrombosis. It's got something to do with thrombosis and blood clotting, and it affects certain individuals. It's like, well, which individuals are you talking about? Why won't you tell us which individuals it is? Let's go to the next story. I got a feeling I know who the individuals are. FDA approves first oral blood thinning medication for children. Oh, how about that? The FDA approved Pradaxa, oral pellets to treat children 3 months to less than 12 years with venous thromboembolism, condition where blood clots form in the veins directly after they have been treated with a blood thinner given by injection for at least 5 days. The FDA also approved Pradaxa oral pellets to prevent recurrent clots among patients 3 months to less than 12 years who completed treatment of their first venous thromboembolism. So I have a feeling we know what the problem with J&J's vaccine is.
Right. And I wanted to do that story because we hadn't done it. I didn't pick up on it in June when it came out. But this, it's like they came out with protocols for hospitals, how to deal with children who are stroking.
Yeah.
In other words, if they're approving drugs for blood thinners for children, and if they're giving hospitals protocols for how to deal with a child having a stroke, they know.
They know.
Right. They know this is going to cause children to have blood clots. They know it's going to cause children to have strokes. They know it's going to do things that never, ever happen. And they're going to, one of the things Gates was doing a mea culpa on was the fact that kids can't get sick and die from this stuff, you know, but yeah, we're still giving them the vaccination and we know it's going to cause strokes and blood clots. And so we're making protocols and medicines to deal with kids having strokes and blood clots to take a vaccine that they don't need.
Right. And we know they know. A few weeks ago, remember, we saw the billboard on the side of the bus saying, oh, it's totally normal for kids to stroke out playing kickball.
Right.
You know, a little Johnny had a gripper during softball. It's totally normal. Don't worry about a thing.
Right.
You know, they have ads for that.
So Matt Letizia was a soccer player for many, many years. And then I think 17 years he's been covering it. And he talks about in his entire career until last year, he'd maybe seen one person, you know, drop in a sports game. And now they're dropping like flies and it can't be, you know, this is not normal. It's extraordinary. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And along those same lines, let's go to the next this is really a graphic. It's not the best graphic in the world, but it gets its point across. Life expectancy continues to fall in the EU. And here's a graph over the years. And let me zoom in a little bit here. Okay, so you can see that in 2020 and in 2021, you know, it's dropping by, okay, so it was 0.9 years here and this is from the previous year. Okay. Right. So the drop was, if you go back up, you can see they say here, in 2020, the average years of life of somebody born in the 27 countries of the EU dropped from 81.3 to 80.4. And then in 2021, it fell again by another 0.3 years. And you can see that there. So that's the bottom line is, you know, you had this long-term historical trend going back to the early 2000s, you know, going up, up, up every year. You have one little blip here in 2015, and now you see this.
Right.
It's like, okay, what do you think is going on there?
So I think it's enormous savings to the retirement system.
Right. And what are the odds that those same people, that the life expectancy, given what we saw in Europe, what are the odds it's increasing in the U.S.? Pretty low.
Oh, it's been falling. So life expectancy has been falling in the U.S.
Yeah.
And to me, it's a balance. It's a budget balancing tactic. That's what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. You know, I did that last video where I said, you know, basically the U.S. is putting a rock in a hard place. You have all your non-negotiable payments, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, plus interest on the debt. They're now in excess of tax receipts. Right. How do you handle that?
Right. That's
you reduce your non-negotiable payments.
Right.
By reducing the number of non-negotiable payees.
Right.
That would be one way to do it because they're drawing a lot of money. Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, healthcare is a very, very expensive thing. And the people drawing the most from that are the older people with bad health conditions.
Well, the interesting thing is health, you know, the health expenses could drop dramatically if you re-engineered the health system. But then, of course, that would not be good for the stock market.
No, that would not be good for the stock market. Right. Right. That would not be good for the pharmaceutical market. There'd be a lot of people upset.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's turn to pushback. I love this one again from India. I'm loving India more. Every day. This is in the Supreme Court of India civil original jurisdiction. This is a PDF, so it's a little tough to navigate. I'm going to just go to, because I happen to know the money shot is on page 109. And here it is, right here. Let me zoom in. With respect to infringement of bodily integrity and personal autonomy of an individual, considered in light of the vaccines and other public health measures introduced to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic, we are of the opinion that bodily integrity is protected under Article 21 of the Constitution and no individual can be forced to be vaccinated. And that is that. What a great result.
That is a great result.
Yeah.
You know,
fantastic.
It was India that stopped the Doha round of GATT. So India keeps... You know, India keeps taking these huge steps on behalf of human civilization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You know, Putin gave his speech on May 9th, I guess, Victory Day. Mm-hmm. And he bats lead off with, you know, to the people. And then it's the people first and then the dignitary and everybody else. The people first. You know, our leaders aren't just, they're not like that. You know?
I think... I don't know. It's what you said before. They're so divorced from the heartland that they've kind of lost their balance.
They've lost touch with reality. They don't care anymore.
When can I use the F word on the Salary Report? One of my favorite quotes from Hillary Clinton is her staff decided to take her to a 4-H club meeting in upstate New York. And she turned to her staff member and said, "What the fuck are we doing here? There's no money here."
Yeah. Right.
Right.
That's perfect summary of that mindset. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Next story, last story of the week, at least in the body of the stories from Pushback. This is Consent Factory, C.G. Hopkins, The Rise of the New Normal Reich. And you see the face mask there with a swastika in it. And basically, C.J. Hopkins runs through some stuff he's been writing about. But the bottom line is he's got a book out. And he says what the book is mostly is an unofficial history. And as it happened, history of the rollout of the new normal, the actual history, which is being rewritten and memory-holed at breakneck speed. The memory-holing is being conducted by global capitalism, but it is also being conducted by the millions of previously normal-seeming people who went the new normal fascist route during the past 2 years and would now very much like to pretend that they didn't.
Anyway. So C.J. Hopkins at the Consent Factory has been writing a series of essays which are the cultural equivalent of what you've been doing at Best Evidence.
Yeah.
So you've been documenting what's really going on with the money, and he's been documenting what they're doing in the culture. And anyway, but this is his latest collection of essays. And one of the things I find, this is his third that I will get. I should have my copy shortly, and I'll review it right away. But C.J. Hopkins can return you to a state of amusement, no matter how bad it is.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So I'm really looking forward to getting this and reading this. And if you haven't checked out The Consent Factory, it's fantastic.
And that is such a gift. I mean, I hung out with a comedian, really good friends, late John Fox, a great comedian. I just always admire his ability to make strangers laugh. That is such a precious gift. And right. Hopkins got that same gift.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
All right. Ready for charts?
Yep.
Okay. Here we go.
When we're starting with the interest rate. Okay. So, John, if you run a personnel department and everybody has a 401k, you know, all the portfolios are set to be a balance of bonds and stocks. And for 40 years in the long-term bond market, the long-term bull in the bond market, if your stocks drop, the bonds would protect you, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, but it's not working that way. And I think as everybody starts to look at their quarterly 401k statement, there's going to be an explosion politically. So go back to the chart. So here we see AGG is a bond ETF. So it's a bond aggregate. And so this is year to date. The S&P now down 17% and the bond aggregate down 9%. If we did the treasuries, they've swung down even more if we did longer bonds. So suddenly, you know, the reason you were getting a low yield on a big portion of your portfolio, particularly if you're getting closer to retirement, is because you wanted to protect yourself from a drop in the stock market. Except now they're dropping together. And so I think there's going to be a lot of nervous, angry people. And again, in the United States, that's coming into an election year. So.
Yeah. Good. Great point.
Right.
But
if the U.S. population buys stocks, the European population and the Asian population don't begin in their personal accounts to own as much as stocks. So this is going to be a real U.S. political phenomena.
Huh. Yeah, that's not a pretty chart, because against the backdrop of that chart, yeah, your stocks are dropping, your bonds are dropping,
right,
your food prices and everything else, your rent's going up so much you can't make your rent payment, as we saw from earlier story.
Well, but here's the thing. If I own all stocks and my stocks are dropping, you know, I've gotten a hell of a run for the last 5 or 6 years, you know, including possibly in dividends. And so I'm correcting off of a huge gain. But if I gave up yield for all those years and returns, you know, and dramatically reduced my capital gains because I wanted to be conservative and protect against a drop, and now my payback is a huge drop. I mean,
yeah. Right.
I don't know.
Right.
Those 60-40 portfolios are not what they used to be. Okay, next chart.
Next chart. Okay, let's hit it. TNX. Okay.
So this, we're just looking at treasury yields. And to remind, this is the...
You're hitting your mic.
Oh, sorry.
You're crushing your mic.
I'm crushing my mic. How am I doing that?
I don't know. You're good now.
I'm
but
good
when
now?
You're moving the papers, yeah.
Sorry. This is TNX?
Yep. The 10-year, 2.951%.
Right. So I just wanted to show these two because rates continue to, you know, they move up and down as they head up, but they, you know, we're still heading up here. They went up to 3 and then dropped back a little, but the trend line is still up.
Yep. Okay. Anyway, let's look at the 30 year. Now we got TYX. So 3.072%.
Right. So now we're looking at the long rate, but here's what's important to understand. Remember when you said we're not getting enough in taxes to cover the nut?
Yeah.
The nut is just skyrocketing.
Right.
Treasury's cost is going up, up, up. And it's not just Treasury, it's all the sovereign governments. So this is around the world. And as we talked about last week, the U.S. dollar bear trap is on.
Big time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's keep it going. FXI.
Okay. So last week I did the equity overview and I talked about how well the weapons manufacturers are trading. That first line is Lockheed Martin.
Yeah. The purple at the top. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is year to date. Lockheed Martin is up 22.5%, a little bit more than 22.5%. Right. As we can see, the next line is the S&P going down. Then the next line, the red, is the European stock market going down. FXI is Chinese, down 20%.
Yeah.
For the year. And so, and the NASDAQ down 22%. So believe it or not, you know, the big tech companies and the NASDAQ, so the huge growth momentum stocks are down more than China.
Huh. That's pretty shocking.
Yeah. So this is exactly, I keep saying it, I'm going to keep hammering it. And it's what Jack Ma said, when trade stops, war starts. And there it is. You now have the U.S. trying to hold up the stock market by pumping out, you know, weapons to Ukraine.
That is a big time 37. I mean, that's headed to 40% gap between Lockheed Martin and the rest of the pack.
Right.
Yep. Trade stop, war starts.
Right. Right. And remember when, you know, we covered it last week, but suddenly Biden pops out another $20 billion with the support of Congress for weapons, just as the announcement that the GDP is falling.
Right.
Not GDP's an accident.
Contracting.
Right. Not an accident.
Okay. Bitcoin. Here we go. Warren's favorite.
So a lot of people have been selling Bitcoin as an inflation hedge, and clearly that trade is not working. So we're down more than 50% from last year's high. So it's hovering. The last time I looked this morning, it was about 29,000. But Bitcoin also shrinking. So now, as I said last week, I think it's a lot easier to pump up portfolios by pumping, you know, a tiny market compared to stocks or bonds. But there is no doubt that everybody's feeling the pain, whether it's, you know, their crypto holdings or their stocks or their bonds.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything's down except for Lockheed Martin.
Not real estate.
Not real estate.
Housing and real estate seem to be holding their own. And I'll bet you, I haven't looked at farmland prices, but I bet you farmland is definitely holding its own.
Housing, you know, hold that thought. That's always delayed.
Right.
The house prices. Right. Remember the peak of the housing market before the 2008? That was the second quarter of 2006. It takes a while.
Yes, it does.
That's an iceberg that takes a long time to change, but it will. You keep monkeying with these rates up. Those house prices are coming down in a matter of time.
Right. And okay. So our favorite chart's coming up.
Favorite chart. Yep. Weekly favorite. Here we go. And to highlight three of the show's favorites, they're on the extremes this end. The VIX, 69.
Unbelievable.
This second from the top. It was locked at the bottom for weeks. It was down here.
I know I said this last week. I got to keep saying this. We have a whole world of money people who have always lived in a world where the Fed put worked, and they've been since 2008, they've been protected by the Fed. The Fed has taken that VIX down to negative territory, to flat, to negative, and that's the world they know. They don't know a world of real risk.
Right. It's a whole generation of people think it's totally normal to have this win in the stock market.
This is going to be, this is just a revolution in financial paradigms, right?
All right, let's keep it going on the chart, though, because we're not done. VIX, way high. Heating oil, also right behind, nipping its heels at 68.42%. And then the third show favorite, Lumber, all the way at the bottom, minus 29%.
Now, remember, that's off of a run on Lumber.
Oh, a huge run, yeah.
Right.
Lumber, in a lot of ways, was the canary in the coal mine in that pandemic. It was the first one to run up.
Right.
Right. It ran away early.
Right.
Yeah. It was a spin, to go back to horse racing, it was a speed horse. It got out in front.
One thing the numbers say is that inflation is here. And it's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. Let's get into the closing part of the show. Yeah, this and that with Hero of the Week.
Hero of the Week is Franklin Sanders. Do you have the picture up by any chance?
You know what? I don't, but it's something that I can think I can correct that.
So last week was Frank Nicely.
Yeah.
Our hero last week was Senator Frank Nicely, because a bill has gone to the governor's desk, and which means if the governor doesn't sign it, or he does, but all we need is 10 days. All we need is for him to not veto it. And Tennessee will have removed the sales tax from gold and silver transactions, which is step one to being able to use them to start a community currency. There's Franklin.
Yeah, here you go.
Yeah, in Mudhole, Tennessee.
There you go.
And
beautiful dog he's got.
He's got beautiful dogs. Beautiful dogs, beautiful horses, beautiful animals. Anyway, he's got these great Scottish Longhorn cattle. But Franklin has worked with Senator Nicely for years, and Franklin has been working for over 40 years to get the sales tax removed from Tennessee sales of gold and silver. And so it's taken 40 years to get it. And I think he's worked with Frank Nicely for about 10 years, ever since Nicely's an organic farmer who became one of the most effective legislators in Tennessee, legislators. So Franklin, you know, if you want to make real change, it takes hard work. It takes really hard work. And Franklin has done the hard work of doing this. So has Senator Nicely. And this is a real serious accomplishment. This can make a huge difference to the people of Tennessee. Because they're also included a depository so that Tennessee can have a depository just like Texas. And for people investing in precious metals, having a state depository makes a huge difference. It also makes it easy for state agencies, particularly the pension funds, to do gold and silver if you have a custodian, a state authorized and protected custodian in the state. So we're seeing more and more states doing it. And Franklin is working on our theme for the second quarter about what's happening in all the different states. And I have a researcher working on what's happening around the globe as well. So we see lots of quiet regulatory and legislative moves to make greater liquidity on gold and silver. And it's important. So.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's no one thing you could do to get out of the system, but there's a lot of small moves you could make. And that for sure is one of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Franklin's a real hero. He's accomplished something very important here. And each state that does this is another state, you know, encourages other states to do the same. It makes it easier for the others to go along.
Yeah, right. Okay. Let's keep it going with Nina's Euroblog.
Yeah, so Nina Hine is trying to do all of her coverage as she travels around Europe going to the museums. She's doing it on a blog instead of doing article. She'll have a new article out, I think, next week. But I wanted to make sure when you go over to Food for the Soul, you check out her Euroblog, because she's had a couple. She was in Venice. If you troll down, the eye candy is unbelievable.
Wow, look at that.
You know, when I'm having a bad day, keep going. Keep going down to the Venice. Oh. She, yeah, see?
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Anyway, so she's been, that's the Peggy Guggenheim Museum in Venice. Anyway, so check it out. She'll just keep adding and adding. And
yeah, look at this one.
It's beautiful.
Wow.
Oh, I remember being in a church in Venice. It's just like.
I've never been.
Oh, you gotta go.
It's underwater, right?
No. They do have a problem. It is sinking. It is sinking, yeah. But some of the art is just fantastic.
I bet. Yeah. Yeah.
And then we wanted to highlight in 2016, I wrote a wrap up on productivity. And because I wanted to warn that if you look at all the things we were doing, like the great poisoning, like central control, it was ultimately going to destroy productivity, and a society can't afford that. So I called it Productivity, Prosperity, and the Popsicle Index. The subtitle was Building Trust Between People, Places, and Money. And I was talking about all the different things that were being done to destroy trust between the leadership and the general population, and that were going to destroy productivity. And I wanted to bring it up because I thought it was an emergency in 2016 when I wrote this. And of course, I got very little feedback because, you know, it's the kind of economic productivity statistics is the kind of thing that puts people to sleep.
Yeah, right.
So I can't say this was my most popular wrap up, but I did try and warn us. And this is exactly what's come true. You know, that article from Deniger is serious. We can't afford this. And to reverse it we know how to reverse this, but of course, you know, the top 1% isn't going to like it.
No. And do you have the time lag factor? It's like the house prices. Right. Things take time to take, you know, we're watching the effect. That's 7.5% down in productivity. That's a delayed effect. I mean, how many more quarters of that are we going to see?
Okay, so now I'm going to be the bad guy. You know how you build a great economy?
Tell me.
One child at a time. It takes 20 years to raise them and make them strong and healthy. It took for your mother to turn out one good attorney, right?
Yeah, a miracle or two.
So, you know, 20 years and then more education, you know, so you're talking about 30 years of major investment to build a human being who's highly productive, right?
Right, yeah.
And to support him and keep him highly productive. And it's one person at a time. And if you destroy them one person at a time and give them lousy education and have them take a break for 5 years to drug themselves and transgender, you're not going to have a healthy economy. And it takes it takes a generation to rebuild it.
Yeah. The war is on.
Right. The war is on. No. The war is on. But remember the story of Eric Reed. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meritocracy could work. Right?
Don't put a period where a guy puts a comma.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, John.
PayPal and taxation, tell us.
Oh, right. So we just mailed a special email to people who are still using PayPal. PayPal has been very clear that they reserve the right to censor and cut you off and charge you money. In December, they told us if we made more than 50% of our January, the prior year's January sales, that they were going to freeze our money. And we went to the subscribers and said, cash and coin, switched cash and coin. You know, we're giving a 3-month promotion. So you get 3 months free if you will switch and go to paying us with cash or coin or check. You know, so you can mail us a check. There are many different, you mail us a check, you can do ACH, you can drop cash off at the Hickory Valley grocery store if you want to drive by. So, we've had a lot of people. We have almost 1,000 subscribers who've switched to cash and coin, and that's really helped enormously. But PayPal has now shut and frozen money from a couple of our allies, you know, and they're systematically. So I think it's just a matter of time until they come to us. Now, we're going to switch our credit cards to a new payment processor, hopefully this month. So we hope there aren't any hiccups, but sometimes there are. So if you're paying with credit card, you're going to come through a new gateway. We'll keep PayPal up, but we keep saying to particularly the legacy PayPal customers, please move. You know, please move. Please move to a credit card if you don't want to do cash and coin. But you can get 3 months extra if you move to cash and coin. And then, of course, I want to let everybody know we mailed the taxation wrap-up. We mailed it 6 weeks ago in Europe, but it mailed all last week in the United States. Did you get yours?
I don't think so, no. But no? Those things, they get delayed. I'm in the sticks, remember?
Right, right. Yeah. Okay, well, hopefully everybody has it this week. If you don't get it this week, let us know, and we'll make sure we can send another one out to you. So my favorite one was Injection Fraud. We mailed it. We shipped the whole, everything individually packaged, and it went out, got picked up, and then disappeared, all of them, for 3 months. Went into a, somebody shipped it down to Hamburg in a warehouse. It sat there. We reprinted and delivered to everybody. And then 3 days after it delivered to everybody, suddenly they let it out of the warehouse in Hamburg. And so every, a lot of people got two.
Wow.
Right. That was a nice, wow. that only cost 21,000 euros.
Oh yeah. These guys don't quit.
Nope. Mm-mm. Nope. Gotta love them. But the, I bet you that was a NATO move is my vote.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
Okay, John, thank you for a great week. And
thank you. Yeah, we'll see you next week, right?
I'm headed up to Malmo, Sweden for the Northern Lights Convention, and you're going to be speaking online there. So we're excited about that. And I'll be, but I'll be back in time for Money and Markets. I'm going to, when we do our pre-record discussion, I'm going to be doing it from the car driving back from Sweden.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. I'll see you next week. All right. Bye. Thanks. Bye.